The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another award-winning Kiefer and Curry. Is Kip Kiefer, Executive Director of the Birmingham Racecourse Casino. I'm Tony Curry, longtime radio TV guy. We do a show called Kiefer and Curry. We talk about whatever the hell we want. We also have a TV show, by the way, ABC 3340, which is huge. We're about 7-8 weeks away from college football. This past week, we did our top five playoff teams. Guaranteed locks, bold locks. Five teams that will get into the college football playoff. What was of your five teams? Mine was South Carolina. People are like, South Carolina. I didn't want to do like the knockdown drag out. Yes, it's going to happen, but it's important that we make all five of these happen. But South Carolina, I thought, was stepping out on a limb a little bit, but I do believe based on their schedule, yeah, South Carolina is going to get in. I think Beamer Ball could be back for an 11-win season. What was the one team that you were like, maybe a little?
Well, I mean, I thought your list was solid. Let me give a name real quick. Lenoris Sellers. He'll be the quarterback for South Carolina.
Yes, he is.
This guy was banged up part of last year, but when he was able to play, he was phenomenal. And he is just, he's like an obscure hit song that's just roaring up the charts. He's on a great metaphor, great analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's on a beeline to be number one. Yep. NFL scouts are already salivating over this guy. And if he has the kind of year that a lot of people are expecting, you know, the only question about South Carolina, they lost some premium defenders. They had three first and second round draft choices, two in the first round in the NFL off their defensive front. But if their defense can rally, they're going to be dynamic on offense. And like you said, the schedule's good. So I like that one. I thought the legend kind of stepped off the plantation a little bit. Yeah, with Miami. I mean, that's going to be.
And the Gators.
And Florida. So I think the Legends spend a little time in the Sunshine State. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but Legends spends time in some other state a lot of the time. So, and I'm not talking about one of the 50 continental United States. But I thought those were a little shocking. And, you know, I know mine and Case's were pretty boring because I have.
It's better to be boring and right than exciting and wrong. Let me tell you, people. People are like, oh, you're going to take a team. It's favored by 20 points, so that's easy. Well, you know, you're better to be boring and right than just remember that, kids. It's okay to be boring.
I didn't want to take Texas, but Texas's schedule is easy as well. They have a trip to Georgia, but other than that, not very difficult. And I do think Alabama's going to be a beneficiary of the schedule as well. Really, their toughest games are at Bryant-Denny, and they don't usually lose there. So I had Alabama and Georgia and Texas off in the SEC. I grudgingly took Ohio State, although now I'm questioning myself. I think they could stumble.
I got them as well. I think you're fine there. I think Coach Ryan finally gets it together and beats Michigan, and I think he gets it done. So I think you're going to be fine.
And I did take Clemson because somebody has to win the ACC, and I don't think there's another good team in the ACC.
They got Klubnik's finally going to grow into himself, and he's finally going to not sound like his name. He's not going to be a club. He's not going to be a knucklehead. He's actually going to be a good quarterback. All right, we got to get into what we're talking about here. ELC, all court ELC live coverage. Andrea Godenzi, the ATP chairman, said, quote, "This is a landmark moment for our sport, not one we've reached without careful consideration." So all court ELC live coverage is now being adopted by the ATP. We'll deliver comprehensive ball and player tracking across the whole tour, leading to an unprecedented level of data for player performance analysis and the development of new statistics. Like, we need more of that in the game in collaboration with Tennis Data Innovations, TDI, in addition to future commercialization opportunities. Yes, we will figure out a way to commercialize this. So ELI or ELC will be, there will be something ELC will be brought to you by, just like SAP. SAP is brought to you by closed captioning. We're selling closed captioning. We're going to get it done. And then yesterday happened at Wimbledon. Palenchenkova, let me get her name right. Anastasia Palenchenkova suggested yesterday that her British opponent may have received potential and preferential treatment As simmering tensions around Wimbledon's use of ELC instead of line judges boiled over on Sunday when the technology malfunctioned at a crucial point on center court. The Russian was serving a 4-4 ad 40, advantage 40, in the first set of her fourth round match against Brittany's Sonia Cartel when Cartel hit a backhand that clearly bounced out. There was no call from the ELC. Again, if you've watched Wimbledon at all, there is somebody saying, out! In this particular case, no one said anything, and the actual ELC said nothing as well. There was no call from the ELC, which replaced line judges for the first time in Wimbledon's 148-year career or history. Pavlyuchenkova was waiting for the call, and umpire Nico Helworth stopped the point before an automated sound said stop, stop, stop could be heard. After a lengthy break while he spoke to tournament officials, Hemworth explained to the players and the center court crowd that technology had not been working during the point, which meant it would have to be replayed. This was despite television footage confirming that Cartel's shot had been long and that the point in the game should have been Pavlyuchenkova's. She said, if the live ELC system fails, this according to the 2025 Grand Slam rule book, which, by the way, has no mention of ELC in it, which is pretty amazing.
Wow.
If the live ELC system fails to make a call, the call shall be made by the chair umpire. If the chair umpire is unable to determine if the ball was in or out, then the point shall be replayed. This protocol applies only to point-ending shots or in the case where a player stops playing. Evidently, no one was watching because the instant replays on television clearly showed it was out. After the interruption, Cartel won the replayed point in the game to take a 5-4 lead. Pavlyuchenkova told the umpire the change of ends because she's local. They can say whatever. You took the game away from me. So the local gal got the call, and because no one was looking at the call at the time, even though there was replay, they decided to replay the point, and Pavlyuchenkova lost that set and lost that point because of it. That's one of the reasons that perhaps we don't need to have computers in live calls. I love it. I think it's super cool. When you see the ball going out, it looks like it's going to go in, and it just goes, and they can even center in, like when the ball is right up against the line, they can center into the point where you can almost see like the X's and O's, you know, the computer part of it, to the point where you can see that there's just a difference. And of course, if the ball is even touching the line, that means the ball is good. It is in. You and I want to discuss whether other sports could potentially use this technology in some shape, form, or fashion. I'm watching the College Baseball World Series, and I'm watching LSU and Coastal Carolina, and I see a particular ball being called a strike when it's not. It was a bad call. I saw two of those same calls last night in a baseball game where the ref threw out the player and the ref, and he was wrong on both of them. It was the Mets Yankees game. Mm-hmm. And he made just two horrible calls. He called strikes on two balls that were well out. They weren't even near the box, and he called strikes on them. And the third one, of course, struck out his batter, and they were down by two runs. They were down 6-4 at the time. And so they get kicked out. In the Coastal Carolina situation, coach comes out, he complains about it. Can't do that. He gets thrown out. He didn't go away. So when he came back and complained again, they tossed him out again, which I didn't realize you could actually do that. So he got suspended not only for that game, but he would have been suspended for game 2 and 3 because he basically got thrown out 2-3 times. I don't know what it was. In Major League Baseball, when you get thrown out, you go out there and you start kicking dirt and you raise all kinds of hell. Why? Because you're going to get your money's worth.
Yeah, exactly.
In college sports, evidently, they don't have that. When they kick you out, you get your ass out of there, or else you're going to be gone. They could kick you out, I guess, 7 or 8 times if you want. You could take an entire week off. I didn't realize that was a rule in college baseball. So
ridiculous.
There's obviously a lot of different things. I didn't like the strike box at first. They have tempered it down to the point now where you can't really see the lines as vividly. And it's more of like almost of like a, just a tad off the color of the strike zone. It's just like just a milligram color off. So you can see it, but it's almost a subconscious feeling. And of course you see the ball where it lands and you see, you know, the speed limit on the ball each time. And I don't have a problem with that. I just, for a while, it took me a while just to get used to that. And so I actually like the balls and strikes. Although that is not used at all in instant replay. It's just a tool that Major League Baseball and that the networks can use to see if a referee is on or an umpire is on his play calling. For the most part, the refs are right on. And of course, we also have instant replay. A certain number of instant replays can be called where you can overturn plays. And we've done that. We've done that ad nauseum in a lot of different sports. The one thing I don't like, and certainly in the NBA, we saw that during the NBA playoffs, is the stoppage of play over and over and over and over again. If you got a game where it's 108-107 and there's 45 seconds left, you can guarantee that they're going to have a stoppage of play at least four or five times just to add more time to the clock, which I think is ridiculous, because if we did that after every play, we could add another NBA game to the length. We could go, well, it was 38.1 seconds. Now we're going to add 0.2 seconds to the damn clock. It drives me crazy. And it just messes up the flow of the game. But I want to get your thoughts on this, the thoughts of computers coming into our sports as a whole. And do you have any ideas on how we can utilize it?
Well, first of all, the Wimbledon situation is ridiculous. The thing about if the chair umpire can't make a call, the point's replayed. This is on network television in
unbelievable.
All over the world. And it's not just the American broadcast. It's the British broadcast. It's, there's no telling how many
everyone
looks they can
it.
Get at. Yep. Why in the world can't they look at the obvious television replay in that situation? If technology fails, that's one thing. If the chair umpire didn't see it because he's not in a good position, really, although he's up high, he should, if he's paying attention, should see it. But if he doesn't, then the obvious solution to that, Tony, was go to the TV replay. That is just absurd. You replay the point. Can you imagine if that was the rule, say, in football?
Well, that's what they used to do. They used to go back to television replay, not necessarily to overturn the call, because we didn't have overturns. Remember, when they made the call, they made the call. Now we go back to TV replay and we go, oh, that person was right or wrong, until they started doing challenges and things like that in sports. And the problem with TV and a replay is sometimes you can't actually tell. That's why the computer on the ALC actually works better, because you can actually see a separation. So maybe they didn't want to go to a television because they already knew what the right call was. They didn't want to go back to television because that, according to the rules, is not the way they change calls anymore. So if they had done that, they probably would have been going unprecedented. What's the crazy thing is it went to the chairman and he should have seen it in the first place. Someone should have said, just say it's out, because you should have seen it in the first place.
Definitely. Well, and again, what do you always hear in every one of these leagues? The whole idea is to get the call correctly,
right. Yes.
Get it right. And that's why we're looking at the posteriors of NBA and college basketball referees, the entire final 3 minutes of the game. There's, their butts get more camera time than the biggest star on the court. It's really not a great visual, and it's absurd, but I've got some other thoughts on that. But the Wimbledon thing is just typical British, pig-headed stupidity, because, again, get the call right. If the TV replay is not definitive, then okay, I guess you could say, well, the chair umpire didn't see it, the technology failed, and we can't tell on the TV replay. I guess then you can replay the point. Yep. But like you said, in this case, it was obvious.
I've never heard, honestly, in any sport. Have you ever heard of replaying? Now, I know in the National Football League, and I didn't realize this, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think just because the next snap happens doesn't mean you can't go back and look at a play that was before the actual snap of the next play. In other words, I think you can go back like one or two plays. I may be wrong there, but you may be able to go back. And of course, by doing that, you're actually taking plays off the table. In other words, you're saying that last play did not happen, despite the fact there was no whistle or anything else. I don't quote me on that, but I believe I've seen that before. And I don't think a lot of people don't realize there's a rule for that. And so, for the most part, though, when play continues, it's over. But we see this in the NBA a lot, too, when a player will hit a two and we think it's a three, we'll give them three. And then 4 minutes later, they take a point off the board. They say, we went back and looked at it, and which I think is kind of screwy, but can you think of any Can you think of anything? The only thing I can think of right now is in the National Football League, and that is to find out where the hell the football is when you're talking about getting a first down or the line. I know a lot of people are talking about putting a chip at the front or the back of the ball to maybe there should be a way to put something on the line. They're doing it in the ATP. Why can't they do it in the National Football League? The problem is you got bodies all over that ball, and you can't tell when that player is down or whether that player is still up or not.
Yeah, but how we're doing it now is even worse.
You like a chain gang, don't you? You like the chain gang, don't you?
Oh gosh, I mean, here's a sport that's totally modernized, but we're using the same system that we used in the 1930s. Two fat guys, each holding a pole connected by a 10-foot chain.
But the numbers are computerized now on top of those poles. It's not that you remember you used to have the slides. They used to have the slides. You know, it was like the match game. You slide it. Now the numbers are computerized, which is pretty cool.
That's a big step forward. and my the art of spotting the ball is my other favorite.
Oh my gosh.
Where you've got two other fat guys, the side judge and the line judge, and
they're always a foot apart.
Both waddle, who are always on the outside of the play. So they are a good 15 yards from where the point of impact is. And they come waddling in, and you're talking about the big bodies that are unpiling. So a lot of times they got to alter their course and avoid slamming into this pile of debris that's getting back up off the ground. But they've got their eagle eye locked on that spot.
Yeah, they do.
And the greatest example last year was in the Texas-Georgia championship game. The two guys came waddling from the side, and I remember Kirk Herbstreit saying, okay, if the side judge where he's looking is the spot, it's going to be first down. Yeah. But the line judge is looking at a completely different spot.
And he was way off. I mean, it wasn't even close. It was more than a foot apart.
Their opinion was it was all more like a half a yard.
Yeah.
It's just so inexact and so stupid that with GPS and some kind of chip, that at least you would have some kind of a better, look at it than a couple of guys waddling in from the side. And that is such a critical point. Remember in the Buffalo, Kansas City game to see who's going to get to the Super Bowl, there was a critical fourth down call where they said that Josh Allen was short, and the TV replay seemed to indicate that he got enough of a push on the drive forward, but they that was a fourth down play. So Kansas City ball, game over. It comes down to those plays so often. And, as a fan, I don't want to spend thousands of dollars a year to go to games and $1,000-$1,500 to go to a championship game when the guys that are not in uniform are most responsible a lot of time for the outcome more than even the players.
Would you say that the game right now is as crisp and clean and as well officiated as it possibly could be? I mean, just based on calling fouls, fairs, things in and out. Would you say that it's about as good as, I mean, I try to go back and think to this point before we had instant replay, before we had any of these things. And it was just a foregone conclusion that when it was called, it was called. Now it's nice to know that if someone gets called out of first base, you can actually go back and look at it. And I do appreciate that. And I know a lot of people, purists, don't like that because it stops the game, but they do get it wrong enough. That it warrants. To me, I don't think there should even be a number of challenges. I think you should be able to challenge as many times as you want. And even to the point where, quite frankly, and I think this is kind of the NBA rule where you can actually go look at a foul and have it reversed, I think is because there's a foul almost every single play. Just like the NFL, there's a holding call on almost every single play. And if you want to sit there and break it down by play, we'll be playing 18-hour games. We haven't gotten that point. We haven't gotten there. So I understand where, it's kind of like throwing over to first base 55 times in a row. I like the rule where you can only throw it twice and you need to move on. So from that standpoint, I do think it's, the whole tush push, the whole Philly play, I think one of the reasons they were talking about taking that off the table was because we couldn't tell where the hell the ball was. A lot of guys didn't want to. And here's the other thing. And to your point, how often do we see a play? It's going, whistle blows, no touchdown. Both guys are running in. They're taking guys off the pile. Then the arms go up. To your point, It's either a touchdown or it's not a point. Because by the time that guy gets to the group of guys on the ground, it's been 3 or 4 seconds. Guys are pulling, scratching, pushing, doing everything they can to stretch ball over. So I'm sure there's been thousands of times when a guy came up short. By the time the ref got over there, the edge of the ball was actually on the line. He's like, okay, it's got to be a touchdown. Because what's the big deal? It's going to be a touchdown. Because whatever they call on the field has to be overturned. That's the thing. Yeah. And if you can't tell the difference, and you'll never be able to tell the difference on those plays because there's so much massive humanity on top of where the ball is, you'll never see it. If it's called a touchdown, it's going to be a touchdown. If it's not called a touchdown, it's not going to be a touchdown. They can't overturn that. They won't.
Let me throw at you something that most people would consider radical.
Love it.
In this era of so much technology, why do we even need, particularly in baseball, football, you'd have to have somebody on the field actually to put the ball where it's supposed to go. A laser pointer from the press box, from the technology or some kind of automatic system would light up the spot where the nose of the ball needs to be spotted. You can have one guy just be the ball spotter, because why not have, with all the technology, why not in football and particularly in baseball, why not have all the officiating done from headquarters? I don't understand the appeal of having these zebras running around on the field or the umpires in baseball who get an amazing amount of calls are incorrect. And I'll qualify that by saying bang, bang plays on the bases. You're going to miss a lot of those because, you know, the human eye is not going to pick up.
Let's be honest with you. And these are paid guys. These is what they do for a living. They are pretty damn good. I mean, there's a lot of times where I know from the stands, we sit there and say that a guy was out. It's amazing how often they get those calls right at first base. It really is. It's incredible.
Yeah. They got a 50-50 shot. That's my response to that.
True.
But anyway, I don't see what the obsession is in this time of technology. College football is ridiculous because you've got the guys on the field. Then you've got usually a retired official upstairs who's probably dozing off every other play. Who's, you know, probably most of the time, and you can't run anymore. So they give him a ceremonial job to be the replay official. But he's tied into headquarters down in Birmingham if it's an SEC game. So why all these steps in the process? Why can't the guys at headquarters just make the decisions? Then you don't have the delays. You don't have the challenges. It's the guy at headquarters is looking. It's a close play at first. They should, if they got somebody assigned just to that game, that guy should be able to make the call instantaneously.
I know what you're saying, and I think they're getting it right now by not only having the refs there, whether they're five refs in an NFL game, five or six.
We're up to eight.
Is it up to eight?
SEC.
Okay. So we got the eight guys, plus we have, I mean, as long as they're willing to employ these guys, the more the merrier to me. I mean, if you want to have 25 refs per game, that's fine. As long as you're getting it right, that's fine.
None of the SEC guys are full-time, by the way.
No, they're not. No, they're doing
their principals and plumbers insurance salesmen.
They're doing peewee games on Saturdays. No, there's no doubt. And they should be. They should be. I mean, if we want them to get the calls right, not to say if you get paid more, it's a full-time job, you should be calling it any differently. Just from a fluidity standpoint, it would feel really bizarre not to have, you're right. You have to have ball spotter. You have to have somebody there that's in control of the ball. Right.
Yes.
And the other thing is, and quite frankly, from the ball spotting, I totally agree with you. I think if you had a ball spotter, just one guy that's in control of where the ball is spot. Okay. Now, this one guy can't be part of every play, right? I mean, because there's a long throw down the field, and is it 69 yards or was it 67 yards? That's where other refs can spot the ball. So from that standpoint, it's a little strange. The other thing is, obviously, you're talking about penalties. You're talking about holding. You're talking about, you know, extracurricular activity after plays. You're talking about sacks. You're talking about all kinds of things. So I think you need to have that component of referees on the football field, or quite frankly, I think you're going to see a lot of guys wanting to beat the shit out of each other. I mean, because it's already a very, very torrential, violent sport, and I can't imagine these guys pushing and shoving for 60 minutes, not wanting to kill each other.
There's been a couple of NFL referees that have been kind of beastly, bulked up guys, but I mean, is really the presence of a 60-year-old side judge going to be a deterrent if two 350-pound guys throw down? I mean, what is he going to do?
If they get kicked out of the game, it will.
Yeah, but you
or it costs you 50, just like it was principals back in our day. You didn't worry about it. You didn't worry about the principal. You worried about your old man when you got home.
Yeah,
and so like these kids, they don't care about the 15-yard penalty. They care about what Kalen DeBoer is going to be doing to their ass when they go to the sideline after he just dropped the ball and lost the team 15 yards in the ball game because his dumb ass couldn't keep his head in his helmet. So that's probably where you're going to have that. So from that standpoint, I was just trying to think even more specifically.
Yeah,
if there was any type of technology and quite frankly, I thought, well, there's got to be something because I think everyone thinks about the National Football League and putting that chip or something in there in the point of the ball because they've done everything they can do.
Well, they experimented with it last year in the exhibition season, and now they're perfecting it. That's going to happen because spotting the ball is, to me, one of the biggest problems. But my whole theory on
I missed that. Explain that. Explain to the audience what exactly were they experimenting with?
They put a chip in the ball, and between that and computer imaging of when the knee goes down, the technology is designed, and they experimented this with during the preseason last year in the NFL, and they had some inconsistencies they didn't really specify, but they've gone back to work on it. So it is in development now, and somehow the computer imaging can sync up the time that the player's knee is identified as being down and with the chip in the ball can determine where the ball should be.
So
spotted.
Will there be a chip on the knee too?
No, that's some kind of computerized camera thing that takes the image and can record the actual instant that the knee touches. And that it works in sync with the ball chip to tell you where the ball
Listen to what you're saying. I mean, are we really doing this? I mean, think about what you're saying here. I mean, that's kind of crazy.
It was actually in play in the preseason last year.
Is the day of bang, bang plays gone? I mean, we're not going to have bang, bang plays anymore. I mean, and let me ask you this. Isn't part of the game, some of the allure of the game, the wrong calls?
Absolutely not.
Seriously, is it not in a weird way good for the sport to have bad calls?
We've had to accept that over the years. There's been just horrendous calls that have cost teams games. If we have the technology, you know, I always thought that was a hilarious and ridiculous argument when people say, well, the umpire is bringing the human element to the game. Screw the human element. Humans are not smart as technology.
Dumbass humans.
In football, Tony, you can have a whole line of monitors and cameras specifically in the stadium trained on certain areas. If Tony Curry's in charge of the left guard and the left tackle on every play, you don't watch the rest of the play. You watch the activities of those two guys.
True.
If they hold, they grab the face mask, they grab a jersey, they cut block, they do something illegal, you push the button and inform, you say, it's not a marker on the play. We'll have to come up with a new terminology. There's a call on the play. And you've got guys watching the wide receiver and the defensive back. You've got, you know, on the quarterback and the rush to make sure there's no fouls against him. You've got maybe a whole line of maybe 15 guys watching specific areas of the field, one or two players at a time. And I think you could do a thousand times more efficient job of officiating the game than having these guys. Sometimes you see flags thrown from 20 yards away on calls.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, I applaud Wimbledon and I applaud the ATP for going this route just because I mean the technology is there and it's super cool. Unfortunately, for Palenchikova, the call yesterday obviously had to be replayed and it was just so happened and where it was at ad 40 and it was 4-4 and it changed the whole focus the entire set. And again, it was a French girl too, a British girl, so she got the call and obviously she went after
home cooking.
Well. You know,
Even technology. I imagine the technology company has some splaining to do this morning.
Well, no doubt.
How is the system not operative? That defeats the whole. I mean, it's got to be operative. They've got to have backups and redundancy.
And to know that it wasn't working after the play. I mean, how long was it not working? You know what I mean? I mean, and again, we're making
it. Somebody's got to be monitoring that. It couldn't have gone on the. Now, sometimes even on our broadcast, and I'm in my studio and you're in yours. Sometimes I'm rattling away and you're trying to get my attention. we don't have any sound. I mean, things happen, but you need to have backups and redundancies. If you're going to go to these systems, you can't have failures
not at that level. That's true.
Yeah. Or maybe in the NFL, we didn't have technology on that play. That's not going to fly. Now, TV technology, I don't think ever fails. Every once in a while, the screen goes black for a second. But, you know, you have to have redundancies and backup plans in case the technology breaks down. But I think we're at the point where, you know, nobody wants to go to a college football game and see, a flag on every play. And we've gotten to the point where that's pretty much the standard procedure in the Southeastern Conference. Let me rave about one other facet. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, I'm watching a Georgia game. I think they were playing Tennessee. There was a critical call late in the game where Georgia had stopped Tennessee drive. Tennessee was punting. Georgia needed to get the ball back to have a chance to win. On the play, a Georgia guy trying to block the punt vaulted himself in the air and landed on the guy in front of the punter that's there to protect him. Mm-hmm. And a flag was called, and it was called I forgot even what they called it, but he got a foul for a vault 15 yards for vaulting. And that happened with like 40 seconds left in the game. So they step off 15 yards and Tennessee takes a knee and wins the game. Yep. I'm telling you, Tony, not 20 minutes later, they switched to the Alabama-Mississippi State game in Starkville. Mississippi State stops Alabama on the first drive. They line up for a punt. Alabama rushes the punter. Exact same thing. They call them for vaulting just minutes later. I am absolutely convinced that there was a memo circulated that week to the officials where we're having way too many of these incidents where guys trying to block punts are landing on the poor defenseless guy. That's a point. It's my favorite phrase. Terry always asked my radio partner, the point of emphasis. I always start off our shows. Yeah. I wonder what the point of emphasis is this week, downtown Birmingham with the officials, because you can usually watch. Last year, there was a rash of calls for illegal receiver downfield one Saturday. I texted her about halfway through the first game. I said, get used to that. They're going to call it all day long. That's the point of emphasis. That's where the human element really needs to be cleaned up. It's ridiculous.
A point of emphasis or a point of contention is one of those two things. Yeah, there's no doubt.
In other words, call this or risk your job.
Well, yeah,
you will call this.
I'm sitting here looking at Steve Shaw's phone number. We can get him on the air. And he's director of SEC personnel and referees and find out exactly what's going on. Yeah, he will never say that that's the point. There may be some things where, and you know where that's coming from. That's not coming from them. It's coming from the coaches. There's a coach somewhere, whether it's Nick Saban or Kalen DeBoer or Hugh Freeze, saying, listen, we're having a problem here, man. This guy or this group or this team is always doing blah, 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 blah. And finally, it becomes the attention of the coaches. And maybe, you know, he goes all the way up the chain. Maybe even goes to the commissioner like, hey, listen, we need to take a look at this. There are teams and different players who are known to do certain things. And if those players, those teams continue to do those things and don't get called out on it, then eventually, and you could tell, I mean, coaches write letters to the refs all the time. They're always writing stuff to Sankey. Hey, by the way, this past week, this guy was holding four times. It didn't happen. Whatever they can do to actually get an advantage there. But I think for the most part, our sports work. I do think that we've tried, and it's funny because Major League Baseball is probably the one that's been untouched through this, even despite the fact we're talking about the balls and strikes, because they're the only sport of all sports that actually gotten shorter. And it's all because of that damn pitch clock. And I can't believe how well that's worked. I can't. It used to be a game would start at 1 o'clock And I would go back and check my score clock or my score at like 2:30, like an hour and a half later, and it'd be like the fourth inning. And then it'd be like 4:30, and I would go back and it would be the seventh inning. And now it's like, if a game starts at 1 o'clock and it's three, it's over. I mean, it's done.
They move it along.
I mean, they get it
along. The time between innings, they hustle them out there. You throw a couple of pitches. And let's go.
I can't believe how well it works. I can't believe it really is. I mean, I thought for sure they would work for a while. Then things would start slowing down. They're still calling strikes and balls. If you don't get it in time, they did it in the College World Series several times. So kudos to Major League Baseball for keeping the game going, but it seems like, man, everyone's pants are on fire. They want to get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
And I love it. It's great. They need to bring
the College World Series. I couldn't even, it was unwatchable.
No,
those games were lasting 4.5 hours.
It was ridiculous.
Because they don't have those rules now. So you still got the guys going around adjusting their cup and fiddling with their slacks and tugging at their sleeves between every pitch, every batter stepping out. Now you can only step out one time.
Yeah.
If you got to get in the box and be ready to hit before 8 seconds or it's a strike. And you don't ever see the batter called for that. Every once in a while, the pitcher waits too long, but you know, it has been a phenomenal success, and it's so much better to watch now. It was insufferable watching the College World Series. Those games took forever.
Hey, I want to ask you one thing here before we let you fly. And by the way, don't forget us again now on ABC 3340. We're going to be on every Saturday morning, and we're going to go right up against college football. What's that first game? Is that Syracuse, Tennessee?
Tennessee in Atlanta in the Chick-fil-A Kickoff Classic at 2:30 that day, Alabama at Florida State, and that night, Notre Dame at Miami. That's the triple header.
All on
the
ABC.
Day.
It's going to be great. But coming up about a month before all that, on August 2nd, at the Bristol Motor Speedway.
Yep.
Your Atlanta Braves are taking on my Cincinnati Reds. I believe I'm going to be out of town that day, and that really sucks because I was really looking forward to going out there.
Well, I'm disowning the Braves. Don't call them my Atlanta Braves. They just got swept by the Orioles.
Yeah, they've lost.
They played the Phillies, the Angels, and the Orioles, a critical, that's what they're calling, a critical 9-game homestand. The Braves went 2-7 and scored about 15 runs in 9 games.
They cannot find the plate. They cannot find the plate. They really are. And there's plenty of time. There's still half a ball season to go. If they play up, it's amazing because every time I see them, their lines are still exaggerated. They're still, the betting public is still on them because they're still the Atlanta
Braves.
Oh,
they're favorite every game.
And so, it's just like, and you keep, and you had them the other night minus -180 and they lost. And I'm like, thinking to myself, I think Strider was on the mound and he's a great pitcher. I'm thinking to myself, they certainly will do. But yeah, but then when they do get great pitching, they don't get any hitting.
They can't score.
Your thoughts while we have a couple minutes of Major League Baseball games being played. It's called the MLB Speedway Classic. I love basketball games played on ships. I love hockey games played at Fenway. I think it's super cool. I'm not crazy about NASCAR at the Coliseum. I think the track is too damn small. It just looks like it's just a bowl. I don't see how it just looks like it'd be. And so I'm not quite sure. I'm not a short track guy. I'm a Talladega guy. But Major League Baseball, they're going to spread it out at Bristol. Are you excited about that game? And should we do more of these kind of things?
I think it's kind of cool that they can set an all-time regular season attendance record at a baseball game. I think they have capacity for, I forgot what it is, something ridiculous, like 130,000 at that joint.
I'm going to pull this up here real quick and you continue to go.
But
it says 165,000.
Okay, I was conservative. I remember the Braves played a game at Fort
Bragg. Hold on. Did you know Bristol Motor Speedway is the world's eighth biggest sports venue?
That's incredible. I've never been there. I'm not a big NASCAR guy, but I had no idea until
amazing.
They started promoting this thing, how massive a facility that is.
That's crazy. Oh, continue. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
In Bristol, Tennessee, of no less.
I've been
through Bristol, Tennessee. And believe me, it's not the eighth biggest anything in the
world. No, it's not. It's not at all.
Little place.
You'll miss it. I've been to Bristol, Virginia, but I've never been to Bristol, Tennessee. Good for them. And it's great that they've got that. And, you know, anytime we can do. And again, you know, for a lot of us folks who can't afford the $300-$400 tickets, whenever you're talking about a venue that large, you can be part of something historical and it doesn't cost you that much to be part of that. And that's kind of cool. So, and I hope they bring something back to Rickwood, too.
Yeah, I hope so. I think it's weird, Tony, that the Reds were the ones who gave up a home game. You'd think that'd be a Braves home game, yep, because Bristol's a hell of a lot closer to Atlanta than Cincinnati, but that's not the case. It's a weekend series that the Reds surrendered a game. I'm sure the league compensated them very well for that.
Well, the Reds are all about the money. If they could sell out every game and go 0-162, they do it. The Reds don't care. They don't. If they so happen win a World Series, which they haven't done since 1990, I'm actually excited because they got a guy named Terry Francona, who of course a lot of people here know and love from the Birmingham Barons days. He's a difference maker. He's one of those guys, you put him at the helm and he's good for 10 or 15 wins. Just to him alone in the locker room. So it's going to be good stuff. All right, my friend, have yourself a great week. Great talk. Kiefer and Curry. Hey, by the way, pulled up some numbers here. We get numbers every 3 months, and your two shows, Kiefer and Curry, and I'm proud to say that I'm part of this, but the Your Need to Know show, and a lot of it has to do with, of course, that Donald Trump is in the office, and a lot of people know how you sway a little bit. You're not necessarily a Donald Trump fan, but you are conservative, probably more independent. A lot of people like to think, but because of that, your ratings are through the roof. So good job on Need to Know. Your numbers are fantastic. I greatly appreciate you, and it's a pleasure and an honor to work with you every weekend, too.
Well, I appreciate that. Honored to have such a lofty perch, and I'll look for the national press release. I'm hoping that'll be front page news in the Wall Street Journal.
And tell people where you're at. You're doing the thing on Jocks. You're all over the place.
Yeah, I've got what a broadcast week for me. I'm actually hosting News Politics on Wednesday and Friday this week on Leland Live, the number one radio talk show in terrestrial radio in the state. That's a big gig, and I really enjoy doing that show, especially with what a great month to be in the saddle there with Leland traveling internationally. Nice. I've been able to oversee a lot of big events in the last couple of weeks. And also this Saturday on WJOX, 100,000 watt powerhouse, it is the first show of the football season. Yeah, man. We're just 1 week from SEC Media Days in Atlanta. I will be on Saturday morning, 8 to 10, with our game time show. And what we always say about game time, Tony, when it's game time, everybody is listening. So you need to get on board. Catch us every Saturday morning as we get you ready for SEC football each and every week. It'll be me and Terry Quillian. When the season gets a little closer, I'll be working with a variety of different co-hosts in the next couple of weeks on that show leading up to the real thing. And like you said, just 7 weeks away. I can't wait.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.